You're listening to United Nations Association and Canada's Between Two Flags podcast series. UNA Canada's mandate is to educate and engage Canadians on the work of the UN and international issues of importance to us all. Through regular sessions, UNA Canada invites subject matter experts to discuss a wide range of issues related to the Sustainable Development Goals and the UN's work. Live tweet as you listen with hashtag Between Two Flags.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of Between Two Flags with the United Nations Association in Canada. I'm your host today, Nathan Adams, Senior Project Officer on the Green Spaces Program, and it's my absolute pleasure to introduce Derek Mayer to you today in our show. He is the President of Digital Link and the Executive Director of Power Up the Planet. How are you doing today, Derek?
Very well. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you. Before delving to the world of IT, Derek Mayer graduated with a psychology degree from the University of Alberta. He went on to work with EMS and later moved into the nonprofit sector, working at an organization helping adults with developmental disabilities. It was there that he learned the importance of establishing a great work environment, something he has brought to his current role as president of Digital Link in Edmonton. Derek had been doing IT projects on the side while working in other industries over the start of his career. He also has a strong love of computers that stems from his childhood. Both of these factors gave him the motivation to establish his own company and build a trusted brand that helps clients with IT, social media, web development, and more. In addition to working full-time with Digital Link and managing a team of 16 employees, Derek is the executive director of nonprofit initiative Power Up the Planet, which seeks to reduce electronic waste in the community. His hope is to see the initiative grow over time and eventually become global. Derek says that his biggest professional accomplishment thus far is he was able to start a successful, sustainable business while having no business background, and that his family is his main motivation in his life and career. Derek, thank you for taking part in our show, and tell us all a little bit about yourself.
As you said, thank you very much. I began my career something completely different. You know, I was working in EMS. I was working on the ambulance all over Alberta and had been sort of helping with things along the side and helping with technology projects with some just friends, and it kind of grew into something bigger. And I'd kind of managed to marry my love of helping out with nonprofits with what I had been doing in my business, that match of technology and nonprofit. And that's really where Power Up the Planet was born from. And both of those initiatives keep me pretty busy along with my family. I have three young boys at home who, you know, keep my wife and I running in many different directions. And, you know, between those and the businesses, it's sort of volunteering on a number of nonprofit boards. It keeps us all pretty busy.
Thanks, Derek. Our first couple of questions come from Gabrielle Newfield, who works at Trees Winnipeg as a Forest Watch program coordinator. So, Derek, how did you start up your business, and what was the most challenging part?
Well, my business started as not a business at all. I had a previous employer of mine approach me one day while I was still working for the ambulance and asked if I wouldn't mind helping her and her husband open an accounting firm. And I said, sure, you know, I'd be happy to, just on my days off, and I did that. And, you know, that grew into they told two friends, and they told two friends. And before long, I had a bit of a part-time job. Eventually, I'd moved on to work for a nonprofit, and when I was finished there, I thought I could turn this into a business, and that became what is now Digital Link. For Power Up the Planet, where it came from is directly related to that, in that one day I went to one of my corporate clients, and he had some people in the back of his warehouse throwing old computer equipment into a dumpster. And I said, hold on a second there, can I recycle that for you? And he said, well, sure, I guess, if you really want to do that. And I took away the equipment. And at that time, my business was run out of my garage. So we've come so far since then. But, you know, it piled up in the garage. One day, one of our nonprofits that we served approached us and said, hey, do you have an old laptop? You know, we've got $50 to spend. We had one that kind of died on us, and we're kind of in some trouble here. Could you help us? I said, okay, let me see what I can do. And, you know, I went into the garage and pieced together a bunch of old parts and, you know, blew them off and cleaned them out and built a new computer system. I shouldn't say new, I should say refurbished computer system for them, and gave it to them. And they were very happy with what I'd given them, and they offered to pay me for it. And I said, you know, we can't really accept money for this. This was garbage about 2 hours ago. So please just take it with our compliments. You know, it comes with no warranty. It might die tomorrow, but for the meantime, it'll get you by. And that's kind of where Power Up the Planet was born. It became a make-work project kind of behind the scenes for the IT crew. When they had some time, they'd kind of piece things together and build new systems. And then we would donate them to charities. And that those kind of two businesses kind of ran out of, under the same title for the first while, until Power Up the Planet became large enough that it became its own entity. As for the most challenging part, I had no idea what being in business for myself was. I came from, you know, every dollar that I had made came from government. When I worked for EMS, it was all publicly funded. When I worked for the nonprofit, it was all funded by the Alberta government. And then all of a sudden I was in business for myself. So easily the most challenging part was the steep learning curve.
And how long have you been running Digital Link and Power Up the Planet? And how do you find time to balance the two?
Digital Link has been running for 5 years as of this summer. Now that's as an incorporated business. Before that, it kind of ran on the side and didn't really have a name. Power Up the Planet has been around for, again, incorporated as its own nonprofit for about 3 months. It had always run off the backbone of Digital Link. And as for balancing the two, you know, I have some great support staff in both of those organizations. We have some amazing summer students working with us right now. We have a program manager that came on with us through a grant last year, actually through the UN Green Corps. So thank you very much. And he's, you know, we brought him in and hired him full time once that was complete. And so it's just, it's easy to balance when you've got amazing people around you that take the workload off.
I'm glad to hear that you participated in our Green Corps program, Derek. We do have a new program called Green Spaces as well. It's about a year now, so not that new. And we'd be happy to send you more youth and student participants to help you with your initiatives, if you like.
That would be fantastic. Thank you.
Excellent. We'll chat after the show. So Derek, what advice would you give someone without a business background to start up their own not-for-profits or incorporated organizations?
My advice is to reach out to anyone else in the nonprofit field. When I started Power Up the Planet, I did that, thankfully, and I had some amazing people help me out just for some advice. No one wants to see you reinvent the wheel. Everyone is so supportive. You know, I think about people like Susan Creasy, who's the executive director of the St. Albert Food Bank and Community Village, who was just amazing at telling me all the bits and pieces. A former work colleague of mine, her name is Lori Winder, working for an organization called Wix. You know, she was instrumental in sort of explaining to me the inner workings of what a nonprofit looked like and did some amazing mentoring. So my biggest piece of advice is just reach out and ask for help. If people are in the nonprofit field, for the most part, it's because they really believe in giving back and helping each other out, and they're more than happy to explain, you know, what their journey was, what they were doing. You know, another great mentor, or another great resource for me was the executive director of the Paralympic Sports Association in Edmonton. Her name is Amy. She was fantastic at just explaining some of her resources and those processes. So yeah, absolutely. That's the easiest piece of advice to give. And I'd be more than happy to help somebody out that was in the same shoes I was in a year ago.
That is most helpful, Derek. We do have over 500 youth participants in our programs, many of which are actually looking into building their own not-for-profits and their own organizations related to the green economy. So it would be our absolute pleasure to perhaps plug you in and share your contact information with them after the show. So
great.
Thanks for that, Derek. Pleasure to have you as an informant. Now, to talk a little bit more about Power Up the Planet, how do you plan on reducing electronic waste in the long term? And where do leftover parts from your recycling process go?
Great. So in the long term, you know, for us right now, our current mission is education and awareness. We're going out not only to partner agencies that we like to work with and we like to donate materials to and donate completed systems to, but the education piece to current business owners and current corporate clients as to better ways of disposing of their waste. We know right now, even today in today's society, with all of the information about global warming and about, you know, landfills filling up and the dangers that lie within there, that people are still throwing all of these things out and, you know, into dumpsters and in some cases just kind of abandoning them on curbsides, which can be very dangerous, of course. It can also be very, very toxic for runoffs and when it gets into the groundwater. Like, there's so many reasons not to just throw electronics in a ditch or in the landfill. To do it long term and to kind of reduce the problem sort of globally, you know, we're hoping to expand our program to other cities eventually, maybe partner agencies in other countries. That would be magnificent. What happens to the rest of our materials once we're finished with them? If they end up being permanently broken or, you know, unreusable or any of that sort of thing, we have another recycling company. It's one level kind of above what we would offer. And they come in and they pick up all of the extra materials that we have and take them to a true recycling plant where they pull out the precious metals and they, you know, any reusable plastics that can be ground down into beads and remade into other things, and, you know, the glass parts are, you know, sent to glass recycling centers. So they really do pull the things apart and use as much as they can and recycle those and, you know, get them back into the manufacturing chain.
I see. And are you right now exclusively available in Edmonton only, Derek?
We're available in the greater Edmonton area. So, you know, Edmonton, the surrounding communities around here, such as Leduc or Sherwood Park, St. Albert, Spruce Grove, Stony Plain. Basically, if you know that you're in the greater Edmonton area, we're more than happy to come in and help you out with things. For larger loads, you know, we do take drop-offs. If we've had people come from as far away as Grand Prairie, that's a number of hours out of Edmonton, just for those who don't know the geography of right around Edmonton here. We have had some deliveries right from Calgary, which is about 3 hours down the road from us. But right now, that's the scale, the sort of scope of where we're at. But, you know, we're hoping to expand.
And what weight or mass or quantity of e-waste are we talking about here, Derek? How much do you handle on a daily basis, or do you have any annual targets? Tell me a little bit more about the actual process itself.
Sure. Our target for this year is we want to have donated 200 completely refurbished systems to different charities in the greater Edmonton region. As for masses of, you know, what we're looking to recycle, that's a little more difficult to measure. You know, sometimes we have clients that drop off massive photocopiers and they're completely broken, and sometimes we can, you know, salvage or kind of grab some parts from them. But for the most part, when something that's that large and that old breaks down, it's just time for the recycle heap. There's not a lot of upcycling or reusing that can be done. When we talk about masses, when you talk about one of those photocopiers, we're talking hundreds of pounds in some cases. But the smaller items, we had a donation of cell phones from a contact of ours with Bell Canada, who dropped off some really old cell phones, and we're very thankful for those. So as far as mass goes, there wasn't a lot of mass to these boxes, but it was probably in the vicinity of 150 cell phones. So, you know, a lot of them were damaged, and we were able to kind of scrounge and scrap and repair a number of them from, you know, the general volume. But some of the things we get are extremely heavy, and some of them are like an old flip phone, extremely light. But, you know, we'll take it all and we'll make sure that it gets to where it can go and be useful, or where it gets to where it can be properly recycled.
That's really impressive, Derek. And you mentioned that you sometimes collaborate with Bell. So do you need to collaborate with government or local communities or large-scale organizations to meet your targets and to expand your program? How's that work?
You know, this in our plan, you know, Our stage right now as Power of the Planet has only been incorporated for a handful of months and was just kind of run as a make-work project before that. Part of what our summer crew is doing right now is trying to get awareness out there. We'd love more corporations. We'd love more government agencies You know, it's, we've seen where the way that government gets, or some government gets rid of some of its old stock, is it goes directly to a recycling company, and in this case, the one that we end up using, and they're sending many units that have never actually seen use. In some cases, they were just too old to be of any use any longer. But they can't then donate those to us, because they have contracts with the government that says, no, these have to go to a recycling station. You can't just give them away, or you can't, you know, re-donate them to other places. They need destruction certificates. So it's a bit frustrating, and not being able to get in front of the right people, but maybe part of what we talked about today is getting that information in front of somebody that can help us do that. So that would be great.
Absolutely. And we do have hundreds of green employer partner organizations that host students across Canada in our programs to provide them with work integrated learning opportunities. So I'm sure we could definitely discuss how we could connect you with such organizations. It's an incredible initiative, especially considering you've only been together for about 3 months, am I correct?
Yes.
That's very impressive. Okay, Derek, so the next couple of questions come from our staff at headquarters at UNA Canada. Our first question for you was, in 2017, Sweden implemented a tax break for repairing items. Do you think a similar model is viable in Canada to encourage consumers to reduce e-waste? Do you think this could help your organization?
I really do. You know, you only need to look as far as the garbage that's typically left out at the end of, say, a festival or something, and someone comes behind, and the first thing that gets grabbed are all the bottles and cans, because there is, because there's a deposit on them, you know, and even if that deposit is only 5 or 10 cents in some cases, people are still happy to clean those up for that money. When you start talking about tax breaks, people want to help out, in my opinion. You know, the intrinsically good side of people, I believe they want to help out. And as soon as you incentivize them to do so by way of tax breaks, then it's also top of mind. So it's adding to what they already want to do, giving them a great reason to. I really feel like that could be a big help. We'd love to be part of that chain to help people with their tax breaks and with that recycling piece.
And does Power Up the Planet intend to actively lobby or to actively raise awareness on such positive initiatives or methods to reduce e-waste, for example?
Absolutely. Part of our mandate is advocacy and education. So anytime that a great idea comes across, you know, what helps one of us helps all of us. So, you know, we're absolutely on board with helping out with new and strategic ideas and advocacy and anything else that we can do to get the information out to people.
And according to a City News article published last month, a poll shows that 3/4 of Canadians would be supportive of a right to repair law, whereby manufacturers must make it easier for consumers to repair electronic devices. Derek, do you think this is feasible in Canada, and would it address the e-waste crisis we have?
I think it's a piece of the puzzle. I am very aware of the right to repair movement. There's some very vocal advocates on channels such as YouTube. I know one of the largest advocates for the whole right to repair law on YouTube speaks about Apple products specifically, because, you know, there is this difficulty to obtain the parts, obtain the schematics to be able to repair all of these things. And while I understand why sometimes, you know, companies would want to keep, you know, the standards up, I believe that a right to repair law will make it feasible for consumers to keep devices longer, not require so much turnaround as in the way of new devices. You know, the right to upgrade, the right to repair, the right to just keep the technology that you know and love and keep it working longer will absolutely reduce the amount of devices that end up in landfills. So yeah, absolutely. I believe it's a big piece of the puzzle. It's not the only solution, but it's a critical part of it.
And could I have your opinion on the severity or the magnitude on the e-waste issues in Canada and internationally, please?
Absolutely. You know, so many of our youth today, of current technology partners, are you know, rush for the latest and greatest. You know, they want to see what's new. I have in the past, and maybe to a certain extent still, I'm a bit of a technology fan myself. You know, the newest phones, I love when they come out. I love to go and look at them. By the same note, I had the same phone for a very long time, mostly because, you know, we really believe in you know, keeping technology for when you can, as long as it's still usable. You know, new and shiny is great. But when it comes down to the e-waste crisis, I think that there's a little bit of fault there as well, where everyone wants the newest and greatest, and there's so much old product and not a lot of demand for that old product, or not a lot of places for it to go, or not a lot of information as to where it should go. And I think that's a huge part of what's going on. A lot of our natural resources and you know, precious metals are finite resources, and you know, the conductivity of those metals and what they do is very important to technology. So as we run lower and lower on these things, for example, it's the helium crisis that's going on right now. It doesn't quite fall into the e-waste, but it's used in so many medical machines, which are, you know, going to find themselves in landfills themselves if we can't find the other parts. So I think that the e-waste crisis is continuing. I think that it's definitely one that's increasing in severity as time goes on. But I feel like there are many people now, especially the youth, who are coming up and saying that this isn't the right way to do this. We need to find other ways. We need to find ways to, you know, reuse what we can or recycle. You know, so much of the conversion of the thought process from electronic vehicles to, you know, making sure that things are efficient. You know, that the thoughts are changing, that the stereotypes are changing, and I think that this e-waste crisis that we have is just, it's systemic, and it's not just, you know, oh, I threw away one cell phone, but I feel like it's part of the bigger picture.
Absolutely. And can you tell me a little bit more about what the individual person can do on a daily basis to help combat this problem?
Oh, absolutely. So three things, you know, we tell people there's three things that you can do. You can, if you see something that needs to be, you know, recycled properly and it isn't, advocate for it. Do it yourself, you know, throw it in the back of your car, drop it off at the EWA center, or give us a call and we're happy to pick it up. The second thing is actively go out of your way to make sure that things do get upcycled or recycled or put in the right place. So not only when you come upon something, but have a plan in place in your home, in your business. Number three is tell a friend. You know, as silly as it sounds, just get the information out there. If people are talking about it, then people come up with ideas and new innovations come out of that. Whereas if no one's talking about it, no one's thinking about it, things stay the same.
Definitely going to share these three pillars of combating e-waste with our participants, Derek. Thanks. And with approximately 50 tons of e-waste produced globally on an annual basis, what other initiatives can be introduced to address this crisis? You've spoken a little bit about this already, but what can be done on a global scale, perhaps?
You know, this is the perfect place for innovation. We see, you know, in different social media platforms, the amazing things that they're doing when they're repurposing things. I think that's going to become a bigger deal as time goes on. And you have social initiatives like, you know, the trash tag, where people are going out into their communities and cleaning up, or, you know, anytime that all of this e-waste, you know, gets thrown out and someone at some point has got to deal with that. You know, there's been a big surge of magnet fishermen going into the major rivers around the world in major cities and fishing not with bait but with great big industrial magnets on the end of their fishing lines, and coming up with washing machines or coming up with old computers or in some cases vehicles. And I think not too long ago in Europe they came up with an old World War II ordnance, which is a little bit dangerous. But as far as what we could do on a you know, on an annual basis and what we can do globally is just, again, we talked about talking about it and innovating and reusing things and some of the amazing things that they're repurposing and creating new items. And you know, I'm reminded of a an article that I had read about a gentleman in Africa who had repurposed a number of old large 2-liter pop bottles into creating a completely powerless air conditioning unit for his hut, and then started passing out the schematics to the village, and everyone's got these things. And what an amazing use for a bunch of old pop bottles that were just going to go in a landfill. Well, when you apply that to e-waste and you start looking at different ways to use things that we've already produced in new and innovative ways, every little bit helps. There is no silver bullet. There is no one thing that the world can do. It's all of these little initiatives where everyone gets on board a little more and a little more, and we start to see big changes.
That's very true. And you just mentioned that story about the gentleman sharing his schematics with the rest of his community. Do you have a favorite one or two stories you've heard about people becoming creative and innovative to address e-waste locally, such as this?
Not necessarily locally, but things that I've heard about from across the country and across North America and across the world, people that take the old electronic plastic toys, the little pianos that have little noisemakers in them for kids, or the little dogs that bark as you pull them across the kitchen floor, and they put them in these great big industrial grinders and grind them down into these little beads. And then he heat presses these beads into molds and creates furniture. And these things, because they're made out of plastic and are multicolored and are quite beautiful, can be used outdoors without them degrading. So they're great park benches and they're great picnic tables for the kids to sit at. And I love that innovation to where they use something that would absolutely just go in a landfill, repurpose it, find another way to get some use out of it, and then it becomes something productive.
Derek, we're about to reach the end of our podcast for today. Is there any long-lasting message you'd like to leave with our listeners for today?
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me on again. But the biggest thing that anyone can do is just ask questions and get involved. I mean, it is the biggest thing. I mentioned before, I have 3 young boys at home, and everything that I do, every initiative the Power of the Planet does, everything I do for Digital Link, is because one day I need them to have a place that they can live in and their families can live in. And this is such a big problem, and it's my corner of the world where I feel like I can make a difference. And I encourage everybody out there to find their little corner and make a difference in your own way.
Absolutely. So we're definitely going to connect you with our network of youth participants interested in the green economy. Hopefully send you some more participants to join in our Canada Green Corps program or Green Spaces program again, Derek. It'd be our pleasure to host your organization. Most definitely, please keep us updated on the progress of your initiatives, your activism to address e-waste, and let us know how you're doing. It's an incredible initiative you're handling, and we do very much appreciate your efforts in Edmonton. So thank you very much, Derek.
Thank you so much once again. I look forward to it.
No problem. Pleasure to have you. And that was Derek Mayer on our program. Be sure to stay tuned for further podcasts on our series, and we look forward to meeting you.